Recorded live.
Good evening, Christian Israel. Pastor Eli James here, along with Pastor, I just got bit by a mosquito, along with Pastor William Fink. And this is another installment of Christogenos. Man, what else can go wrong? Last Sunday, I couldn't breathe, and today I'm getting attacked by mosquitoes. We've had so much rain. The weather here in Chicago has been so wet and humid and hot that we're having a banner year for mosquitoes, and my screens aren't keeping all of them out. Yes, mosquitoes, right? Things could be worse, right? Okay, yeah, so, William, you wanted to do a bit of a recap. We finished up with chapter 19 on the book of Ezekiel last time, and you wanted to do a bit of a recap before we start tonight?
Yeah, I just think that some of this is so important that we should, it's worthy of, you know, of a synopsis.
Yes, okay.
In Ezekiel chapter 16, we saw strong parallels with Jeremiah chapter 2. And it's clear that much of the sin in Jerusalem is due to the people allowing themselves to be infiltrated by the Hittites and Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
Deuteronomy chapter 7 and 12 are examples of the warnings that Israel received, that they were to destroy the peoples of the Canaanites, destroy their idols, and not be ensnared by them. Exodus 23:33 is quite succinct, where it says, "Now they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee." And you know, today, in this day and age, we, in the late 19th century, what we let in these same Canaanites into our land, and what did they do?
Right.
They set up all of their own gods.
Mm-hmm.
They called it Hollywood. They called it professional sports. They called it vaudeville. But they set up all their own gods and led us away to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's crystal clear if you understand the Bible message and trace and identify the parties of the Bible then and now.
Yeah.
And they can all be identified very, very easily.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now as we see it
happening again today. That's right.
Right. Exactly. And it's the same exact pattern. And we might have technology now, but that doesn't make it any different.
Right.
And as we see in Numbers 33:55, Joshua chapter 23, Judges chapter 1:21 forward, Israel failed to drive out or destroy the Canaanites, made leagues with them, followed their idolatrous and perverted ways.
That's right.
And now here in Ezekiel, we see the climax and the final result of that. It took 800 years in the Old Testament. Hopefully it won't take that long as this pattern repeats itself today.
Right, right. Well, the Canaanites / Edomites / Khazars took total control of our country with the institution of the Federal Reserve Act.
Well, right. Now it's being gutted.
Yeah.
Basically.
And there's not much left to steal from us.
No, there's not.
And the amazing thing is the average Christian, the average white Christian, cannot see that he's being robbed.
And
daily.
Not only that, but he's worshiping his rapists.
That's right.
He's worshiping his robbers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Could
it get any worse?
Right. It's hard to tell. In Ezekiel 16:60, the hope of a new covenant is clearly evident. And even though that's more explicitly stated in Jeremiah chapter 31, it's here in Ezekiel 2. And Ezekiel 17, we see a parable that those in Jerusalem who go into captivity in Babylon will eventually grow into a vine, even though it's a vine of low stature, and whether or not that's a good vine or a bad vine is arguable, because Ezekiel doesn't go into particulars either way.
Okay.
But in Jeremiah chapter 24, we see clearly that there are both good and bad figs taken to Babylon. We also see in Ezekiel chapter 17 that the those who flee for refuge from the decree of Yahweh that Israel would be taken into captivity, and this has application today too, who flee for refuge to Egypt would be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are also told at the end of Ezekiel 17 that a portion of the royal family, and that's perfectly evident comparing verses 17:3 and 17:22, would be taken away and planted in the quote-unquote mountains of Israel that can't mean in Palestine, and that the green tree would be brought low while the low tree, while the dry tree is exalted. And this in context surely has to be a reference to the various houses of Judah, namely Perez and Zerah, and their role in history and prophecy. In Ezekiel 18, verses 1 and 2, we see a prophecy very much like that found in Jeremiah 31, 27 through 30. I'm talking about the sour grapes, and when the fathers eat them, they'll pay for their own iniquity.
Right.
Yet, you know, instead of simply the children paying for their sins.
Right.
And it's evident that Yahweh is informing the children of Israel there that they would not be forgiven their errors simply on account of their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Which must have been a, you know, we see it here in Ezekiel, we see it in Jeremiah, and that must have been a prevailing religious attitude at the time. I'm an Israelite. I got to be forgiven. I can't get, you know, I'm going to take this sheep up to the temple and
well,
get
actually,
it slaughtered.
Actually, Judeo-Christianity today has the same attitude. They all believe they've been forgiven of every possible thing they'll ever do.
Well, it's the same exact patterns of sin
and
self-righteousness and a lack of repentance and an approval of the sin. And the same thing was happening in ancient Israel that in the 7th century B.C. that's happening here today.
Right.
It's the same exact pattern in history.
Yeah.
The only difference is that today we drive cars instead of chariots.
Right. Well, I've been laying, you know, I've got the outline for an article called The Judean Parallels, okay? And that is basically comparing how the Canaanites and Edomites usurped the kingdom of Judah, you know, during the days of Antipater and Herod, okay? And comparing the personalities and the events that happened then to what's happening in America today. Because it is, you can list, you know, Herod would be like Obama, right? Okay. Just before everything collapses, we had Herod, okay? And so now we have Obama. Everything's getting ready to collapse, folks, okay? And we have a non-Israelite sitting in leadership position. Bad news, folks. That's a violation of Deuteronomy 17:15. You shall not have one who is not of your brethren sitting and ruling over you. But the Judeo-Christian churches are teaching that this is actually a good thing. But
well, right, and that sounds like a noble endeavor. But that there was one difference in between first century Palestine, even though the infiltration was exactly the same.
Yeah.
First century Palestine, they had Rome to contend with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they had the greater power that neither Israel of seven, you know, the 8th century B.C. did not have that. They did not foresee the rise of Assyria to empire and that threat in their own failure. Now today, we have not foreseen the enemy building up China, and that, some of us do, but most of us don't, and Russia, and the enemy built up Russia too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we at our expense,
exactly,
in the 1930s, just like the Chinese are built up today at our expense.
That's right.
But the people generally don't see it, and we don't have that greater authority. But we do have that opposing evil empire, right?
That's right.
Just like the children of Israel had the Assyrians and the Babylonians,
but
which at least at that time were for the most part of the same race.
Well, you know, I perceive that in the first century B.C., you know, actually first century A.D., when Christ walked the earth, many of the Judahites were deceived by the rabbis, that is the Pharisees and the Sadducees, into participating in the death of Yahshua Messiah.
And today they're deceived by the rabbis into participating in the hatred of Yahshua.
Right, and Zionism, communism, international warfare, they all think this is good. They all think it's a fulfillment of Israelite prophecy. No, it's a fulfillment of Canaanite prophecy. So they got it all wrong, and you know it's just proof that the power of deception, that the satanic deception is so great. And you know, and here, Bill, you know, it really gets at my craw when I see Christians being so smug to think that they're saved when actually the Antichrist is creeping up behind them and drawing the knife and getting ready to stab them in the back.
Well, that's the story in Ezekiel verses, 18, where we see that, we wouldn't be, we couldn't have an assurance in simply who we are, that if we sin, we're going to be punished for it.
Right.
There's no doubt. We don't even know a Daniel and Job, as Ezekiel said.
Exactly.
Couldn't save their own children except themselves.
Right.
And their own children had to seek righteousness for themselves.
Right, right. And Jesus, how many converts did Jesus make? Right? Not too many.
Well, right. I mean, he may have had a few thousand, but out of the whole world.
Yeah.
And that's all he was supposed to have, because that's all he wanted.
Right, right. Well, he knew those, what did he say, Father, the ones you have given me, I have accepted, okay? So that, the ones who were capable of understanding who he was and what he was, they did that, okay? And that's our job today, is to make people aware who he is and to whom he has come.
Well, Rome wasn't throwing the martyrs to the lions because they were preaching peace, love, and joy.
That's right. And even if they were, they would have still thrown them to the lions, right?
Now, nobody's going to throw the useless 60s hippie to the lions, right?
Right, yeah, because he's not a threat to anybody.
Right, exactly.
Exactly, right.
And pot smoking. Well, he is a huge threat to everybody, but he's not perceived as a threat.
Right, right.
But the In Ezekiel 19, we see a simple parable of lamentation, which again states that the people of Jerusalem are going to be taken into Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my summary of the last few chapters.
Yes. Yeah. And obviously the parable is apt. Virtually the entire Old Testament keeps repeating this theme that the Israelites, due to the fact that they refuse to obey Yahweh's law, will be punished. And various types of punishments. And Yahweh always brings other nations, such as the Assyrians, such as the Babylonians, and such as the Egyptians, to punish the Israelites for their disobedience over and over and over again. So, when will we learn obedience? When will we learn it? Okay, that's the question. And, of course, and the second coming will determine how many of us have learned obedience, right? Okay, here we go. Chapter 20 of Ezekiel. Verse 1, and it came to pass in the seventh year, in the fifth month, the tenth day of the month, that certain of the elders of Israel came to inquire of the Lord and sat before me. Do you have any comments on the timing here?
Well, this is the seventh year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, and therefore it's about 590 B.C.
590 B.C.?
Yes, Ezekiel measured time from the beginning of his prophecy from the number of years in the captivity of Jehoiachin, the king, who actually Ezekiel himself was taken into captivity along with.
Okay. Okay. All right. Verse 2, then came the word of Yahweh to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the elders of Israel and say to them, Thus says Yahweh, are you come to inquire of me? As I live, says Yahweh, I will not be inquired of you. He is not interested in being inquired of by sinners.
Well, right. Sinful men who are not obeying Yahweh's law have no standing in prayer.
Right,
and that's just as true today. And people don't understand. Why am I sick? Why am I dying? Why are my prayers not answered? Why did my dog die? Why did that kid down the street throw a brick through my window?
Yeah, right.
Sinful people have no standing in prayer. That's just the way it is.
Right.
And did he not just tell us in all of Ezekiel 18 that we must follow the law or be judged? That's the whole theme of Ezekiel 18.
That's right.
And these things, he has made a condition of mentioning them in conjunction with the promise to a new covenant.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about the taking away of Israel, but he's hanging a new covenant in Ezekiel 16:60 in front of their noses like a carrot. If they're obedient.
Yeah.
He's
right.
Equating the obedience and its necessity with the new covenant. And today we have all mainstream religions absolutely denying the need for any obedience at all to the laws of God.
That's right. That's right. It's all feel good. It's become feel good religion.
It's the Talmud for dupes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay, verse 4. Will you judge them, son of man? Will you judge them, cause them to know the abominations of their fathers? Of course, and now this brings up a very interesting point. because the fact is the modern denominations refuse to learn from history. They absolutely refuse to learn from history. And therefore, they are repeating history, the negative aspects of history, over again.
And to know the abominations of our fathers is only to know history.
Yes, right.
Today, half of us don't know who our fathers are.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately.
That's a joke, but most people actually don't know who their fathers are.
But
most Americans, when you ask them, well, what are you? And I've run into this time and time again. That they can't, they don't know. Oh, I think I'm American. I'm American. Maybe I'm English. Maybe I'm German.
Yeah.
I think I had a grandfather that was Scottish. I don't know. I know, you know, I'm fortunate in that I could go most branches of my family back 5, 6, 10 generations.
Uh-huh.
Most people can't go back 2 or 3.
Right.
And that's sad. If you don't know your family history and if you can't know your national history, if you don't know your national history, how could you know the abominations of your fathers?
Right, right. Yeah, and then you know, certainly that's our genetic, and obviously the white people are the only ones that really have any kind of traceable history, genetic history. The other races simply never have bothered. Okay,
they simply never cared. And the
right.
Jews change their names so often from country to country. They have
no idea. Right.
If they weren't evil children of the devil carrying the Talmud from place to place,
right.
They would have no idea who they were.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the denominations simply have no interest in the history of the Bible. And the reason for that is because if you actually investigate the history of the Bible, a lot of their modern doctrines have to be tossed out because it proves the exclusivity of the message. As Paul says in Romans chapter 9, that the Edomites are vessels fit for destruction. And in Galatians chapter 4, that the Ishmaelites are cast out of the covenants as well. Okay? So what we have here is a totally anti-historical perspective. Now, and on top of it, the Jews deem to write our history for us so that we have no idea what happened in the past, right?
Well, right. There's an incredible amount of propaganda on the shelves passing it off as history.
Yes.
There's histories of England written by, I'm giving one example, Simon Shamma. He's not one bit English. He has no right writing a history of England.
Right.
He's writing the Jewish history of
England.
That's
right. That's right. The Jewish version of history. Well, that's pretty much what the Bible is with the Masoretic text, right? And with the incredible distortions of Paul that they have managed to accomplish, you know, in translating the New Testament. Yeah. So here, let's continue. Verse 5, and say to them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, in the day when I chose Israel and lifted up my hand to the seed of the house of Jacob and made myself known to them in the land of Egypt. So he didn't make himself known to all the world, folks. In the land of Egypt, when I lifted up my hand to them, saying, I am Yahweh your Elohim, in the day that I lifted up my hand to them to bring them forth of the land, from the land of Egypt into a land that I had espied for them or selected for them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Then said I to them, cast ye away every man the abominations of his eyes, and defile not yourselves with the idols of Egypt. I am Yahweh your Elohim. So, again, here... Whenever we put something of this world before Yahweh, that's idolatry. No, it doesn't really matter if you have a little statue. Idolatry is not the worship of statues.
No, we find idolatry in our televisions, in our sports cars, in all of the things that we covet that we really don't need in order to exist every day.
Right. Idolatry is anything that you put before Yahweh. It's the first command. I'm the Lord your God. You must worship me before all things. And, of course, the vast majority of people on this planet, including most Judeo-Christians, are practicing idolatry in that sense. Verse 8.
Well, they have worship reduced to 1 hour on Sunday, right?
Right.
If they do that 1 hour on Sunday, then the other 167 hours a week are free.
And they sleep through the sermon, right? So it's only half an hour. Verse 8, but they rebelled against me and would not hearken to me, They did not every man cast away the abominations of their eyes, neither did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury upon them, I will to accomplish my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. Now here's another myth, you know, total myth of many denominations, that Yahweh doesn't punish his people. Of course he does. It's like when a father reproves a child who is not behaving, he chastises them. He disciplines them.
Well, you know, I have a note here later on tonight, but I'll mm-hmm. repeat it now.
Yeah.
Hebrews 12:8. If you're without chastisement, then you're not a son. You're a bastard.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty plain. I mean.
Yeah, and we should expect to be chastised when we sin. But the problem is most of these, you know, antinomians today and universalists, they don't believe that they're sinning. You know, because the law has been done away with, so they, you know, but, you know, it's obvious that the world, especially America, is being punished right now for its sins.
The Christianity that they maintain
mm-hmm.
is brought to you by the devil.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's
the devil's in the pulpit.
By Satan. It's the best religion Satan could buy.
Right. Verse 9.
Or the Jews could buy.
That's right. There you go. But I wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted before the heathen, among whom they were, in whose sight I made myself known to them in bringing them forth out of the land of Egypt. Wherefore I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. And I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. And this is a common theme here in Ezekiel. Yes.
Well, yeah, but let me say that this is translated in this manner in the New Testament also.
Mm-hmm.
That if and it almost sounds like a punishment. If you keep Yahweh's statutes and Yahweh's judgments, you'll live in them. And in other words, you're stuck with them is kind of the way this sounds to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really means that if a man does these things, he shall have life by them.
That's right. That's right. The law is life. Absolutely. Verse 12. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am Yahweh at that sanctified. And that's an interesting question. Isn't it true that only the Israelites had the Sabbath?
Right.
No,
and
they didn't
have the Sabbath to go to the mall
mm-hmm.
or to go to the stadium. And aside from the Sunday-Saturday argument, which is only an allusion to me,
mm-hmm.
modern sports has truly become a substitute for the Sabbath.
Right.
And it's evil. It's pure idolatry.
Right. Absolutely. And, of course, the Jews, being Edomites, you know, what they specialized in is taking rituals, borrowing them from the Old Testament, which they had no part in writing. The Jews did not write a single word of the Old Testament. They copied the Masoretic text from the original Hebrew and redacted it, removing, you know, probably a quarter to a third of all the Hebrew scriptures they had, redacting it and just picking and choosing what they liked, right? And that's what's called the Masoretic text. But they didn't write any of that. It was written by the Israelite scribes, not by Jewish scribes, okay? The Jewish scribes didn't come until like 120 BC. So it's all a charade. And so what their Sabbath is based on, you know, moon watching. and actually, it's not even based on that. They have a formula now that they made up around 500 AD, which has no relevance to the Bible whatsoever. It's just, and it certainly has no relevance to agriculture because the Jews don't farm. Okay, they leave that to us. Okay. So, well, let me continue here. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbath to be a sign between me and them that they might know that I am Yahweh. That sanctified them. Now, in spite of all this, Caucasian Israel has maintained the Sabbath for 3,500 years. Okay? So our people have maintained the Sabbath. Only recently, as you say, the Sabbath has been polluted. Verse 13. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They walked not in my statutes, and they despised my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. And my Sabbaths they greatly polluted. Then I said I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them. but I wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted before. Oops, okay, got to turn the page. Before the heathen in whose sight I brought them out. Yet also I lifted up my hand to them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Now, it's pretty obvious that if Palestine or Canaan land in those days was one of the most fertile areas, then the fallen angels and their progeny would have realized that, and that's why they got there first, okay? But Yahweh specifically says that I'm going to take that land away from them and give it to you, Israel, okay? And it will always, and then for, of course, the whole planet is to be ours if we obey his law, okay? Verse 16, because they despised my judgments and walked not in my statutes, but polluted my Sabbaths, for their heart went after their idols. So apparently what we're hearing here, Bill, is that they began practicing, you know, Canaanite rituals on the Sabbaths.
Well, right from the Judges period.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, right from the earliest times they were screwing up.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt.
So it's not just not practicing the Sabbath. They were actually practicing Canaanite idolatry on the Sabbaths. Verse 17, nevertheless, my eye spared them from destroying them. Neither did I make an end of them in the wilderness, but I said to their children in the wilderness, walk you not in the statutes of your fathers, neither observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am Yahweh your Elohim. Walk in my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and hallow my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. Notwithstanding, the children rebelled against me. They walked not in my statutes, neither kept my judgments to do them, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. They polluted my Sabbaths. Then I said, I would pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the wilderness. Now, it's interesting here, this issue of Sabbaths. Even though I think it was during the French Revolution, which was an atheistic, communistic revolution. A lot of people don't realize that. French Revolution was run by the Illuminati, who were atheists and communists. They tried to do away with the Sabbath, okay? They tried to force people to work 7 days a week.
Well, they also did away with all religion for a short time.
That's right.
They created a goddess of reason and worshiped
right.
a goddess of reason.
Right, Jewish reason, yes, exactly. Well, what they found out was that without the Sabbath day rest, people would just wear out, and the efficiency level would steadily drop because our bodies require that seventh day of rest. Our bodies require it, okay? So trying and forcing people to work 7 days a week means that they're going to be less efficient, less work gets done, and the work gets even shoddier as time goes on. So even the atheists and communists of the French Revolution realized that we have to have our Sabbath rest. Okay? Verse 22. Nevertheless, I withdrew my hand and wrought for my name's sake that it should be not polluted in the sight of the heathen, in whose sight I brought them forth. Again, he's stressing over and over again, you, my people, you are besmirching my name by not obeying my law. You're making a mockery of me in the sight of the non-Israelites of the world. How dare you?
And we're doing that same thing by following the Canaanite Jews today.
Exactly. And we're making idiots of ourselves when you do so. Verse 23, I lifted up my hand to them also in the wilderness that I would scatter them among the heathen and disperse them through the countries. Of course, that started in 745 B.C. because they had not executed my judgments, but had despised my statutes and had polluted my Sabbaths, and their eyes were after their father's idols. Wherefore, I gave them also statutes that were not good and judgments whereby they should not live. So
now that's, you know, a lot of people say, well, how does Yahweh do that? How does he give us anything that's not good? And what he's referring to, that this is a direct reference to the blessings of obedience compared to the consequences
right.
of disobedience
punishments.
Outlined in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28.
Right.
It's clear that cause and effect, whether for good or for evil, are a part of Yahweh's natural laws.
Right, yes. Yeah, and then the statutes, whether the statutes specify the punishments, okay? And so if you violate the statutes, you get the punishment. It's just that simple. Verse 26, and I polluted them in their own gifts in that they caused to pass through the fire all that opens the womb, that I might make them desolate to the end that they might know that I am Yahweh. And passing through the fire of Molech, it means very specifically, it means literally throwing your babies into the sacrificial fire of the Canaanite god Molech.
And it also seems to mean, it also seems to metaphorically mean to cast your seed into the wombs of strange women.
Okay.
And that's shown by, even though I don't agree with a lot of his work, it's shown by George Lanza.
Right.
Who does better with the Hebrew idioms than he does with the Greek New Testament.
Yeah, because Aramaic, that's coming from the Aramaic, which retains a lot of the idiomatic language of Hebrew. Yeah, very good. Verse 27, therefore, son of man, speak to the house of Israel and say to them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, yet in this your fathers have blasphemed me, in that they have committed a trespass against me. For when I had brought them into the land for which I lifted up my hand to give it to them, then they saw every high hill and all the thick trees, and they offered their sacrifices, and there they presented the provocation of their offering. There also they made their sweet savor and poured out their drink offerings. Okay, so they got drunk, they were reveling, and they were killing their own babies. Verse 29. Then I said to them, what is the high place whereto you go? And the name thereof is called Bema to this day.
Go Bema.
Yeah, right.
I mean, today we have high places. They're called theaters and stadiums.
Right.
That's the impression I get when I read that.
Go Bema. Right. Verse 30. Why say to the house of Israel, thus says the Lord God, are you polluted after the manner of your fathers, and commit you whoredom after their abominations? For when you offer your gifts, when you make your sons to pass through the fire, you pollute yourselves with all your idols, even to this day. And shall I be inquired of you, O house of Israel? As I live, says Yahweh Elohim, I will not be inquired of you. Again, repeating, he does not listen to people who are sinners and who are practicing idol worship. He has no interest in us when we're doing that. Verse 32, and that which comes into your mind shall not be at all that you say, we will be as the heathen, as the families of the countries, to serve wood and stone. What we're saying here, you know, obviously, the modern day Judeo-Christians, the dispensationalists, who are trying to bring into the other races into Christianity. Okay, their intention is not idol worship, but they don't realize that it is.
Well, the result of it surely is
that's
idol
right.
worship.
It results in idol worship. Because look what they're doing. They're bringing in voodoo. They're bringing in Wicca. They're bringing in homosexuality. They're bringing in everything that's forbidden. Verse 33, as I live, says Yahweh, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out, I will rule over you, and I will bring you out from the people, and will gather you out of the countries wherein you are scattered, with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with a fury poured out. Is he not saying that he is going to take us, true Israelites, out of all those people with whom we are worshiping idols?
Well, that's absolutely, it's absolutely true, and it's going to happen again, only
right.
Because we're in the same pattern now, looking towards the fulfillment, the culmination of the New Testament in the return of Christ.
Right.
However, this already happened.
Oh, yeah.
When the Israelites,
yeah.
When the real Israelites and not the Canaanite Jews,
yes.
were deported by the Assyrians and by the Babylonians, they long ago migrated out of Mesopotamia and into Europe as the Saka and the Kimmeroi, the Kimmerians, and the gospel of Christ caught up with these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of and that is where he pled with them in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And all of this is very demonstrable in the prophets and
right.
in the histories, as we've already proved in our previous series on Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a significant prophecy, which is ignored or misinterpreted by all mainstream sects. How could this ever be fulfilled in the Jews,
right.
past or future? It was not, and it never can be.
Mm-hmm.
There is no more wilderness. This
right.
is long done. Those nations wherein that the Israelites were scattered, those nations are long gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been regathered out of those nations. That regathering happened when our ancestors crossed the Caucasus Mountains and became the Germanic tribes by 500 B.C., for the most part.
Yeah, well, the Jews were never banished to the wilderness, except for possibly Cain, okay? The fact is the Jewish people have always followed through Israel. After Israel was banished into the wilderness and developed city-states and cosmopolitan, and prosperous nations, etc., that only then did the Jews move into the wilderness, right? After it had been secured. Verse 35, "And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and there will I plead with you face to face," obviously through his preachers and prophets, "like as I pleaded with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so will I plead with you."
And that happened when the gospel was brought to those tribes.
That's right. Absolutely right. Yeah, because certainly Martin Luther and all of the Reformation preachers were part of this, teaching us and reaching out to us face to face. Verse 37, "And I will cause you to pass under the rod," that is, the rule of law, "and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant." Remember, our people at Mount Sinai swore an oath, our ancestors swore an oath to obey the law.
Well, right, but I believe that this is the bond of the new covenant,
okay,
as we've already seen promised in Ezekiel 16:60.
Okay, yes.
And the new covenant, the new covenant demands obedience to the law.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
It's not the written law of the Levitical priests. It's the moral laws that were written in our hearts.
Right.
That we have, we know the difference inherently between right and wrong.
Yeah, yeah. White people have to be, corrupt?
Well, we have to be coaxed into sin through Jewish television, through the Jewish academic system.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay to be a fag. It's okay to be a homosexual.
Right.
It's okay. Nothing. You have a right to do that.
Yes, yes. Verse 38, "And I will purge out from among you the rebels and them that transgress against me. I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am Yahweh." Okay, now this sounds again like a prophecy. The land of Israel is wherever we settle. Okay,
and we're basically told that the Canaanites wouldn't follow us into Europe.
Right.
Not for at least not for a long time. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
There's a whole bunch of other prophecies in play.
Right.
But when those Germanic tribes settled Europe, that they were Israelite tribes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But even here, the rebels among us will be purged out, and that's going to happen again at the judgment day. Those who refuse to obey the covenants and the promises and that relationship that Yahweh demands of us between ourselves and Him, those who rebel against that will be purged out of our company. Verse 39. "As for you, O house of Israel, thus says Yahweh, go you, serve you everyone his idols, and hereafter also," he's mocking us, "if you will not hearken to me, but pollute you my holy name no more with your gifts and with your idols. For in my holy mountain, in the mountain of the height of Israel, there shall in all the house of Israel, all of them in the land, serve me. There will I accept them, and there will I require your offerings and the first fruits of your oblations, with all your holy things." I can't be any clearer, Bill. I mean, all of these first 20 chapters of the book of Ezekiel are all fire and brimstone for disobedience.
Well, right. And here I got a few things to say.
Okay.
There's a lot of important things here when we carefully consider the context and look at the new covenant. Here we can see the new covenant promise as it was transmitted by Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Converge perfectly with the Old Testament prophets. As Paul explains to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, that they indeed descended from the Israelites of the Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, speaking of Israel, at 1 Corinthians 10, 18 to 20, he says, and my translation is perfectly literal, "Behold Israel down through the flesh."
Mm-hmm.
"Are not those who are eating the sacrifices partners of the altar? What then do I say? that which is sacrificed to an idol is anything, or that an idol is anything, rather that whatever the nations of Israel, sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to Yahweh. The Jews weren't sacrificing anything outside of the temple, the proper Jerusalem. Yet, you know, the sacrifices laid down in the Levitical law in the first century A.D. Only the pagans were.
Yeah.
Only the pagan Scythians, the pagan Greeks, and the pagan Romans. And it can be proven that all of those people descended from the Israelites of the dispersions of the Old Testament.
Right.
And that's who Paul is talking about here when he says whatever the nation sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to Yahweh. Now I do not wish for you to be partners with the demons. He's begging the Corinthians to come out of that Canaanite paganism that their ancestors had adopted that we see Ezekiel talking of here in the Old Testament.
Okay, well, we have to be a little careful here because this is the transition period when the rabbis began formulating the Talmud, okay? And they began in earnest the impersonation of true Israel by pretending to follow the laws of Moses, which they never did, okay? So a lot of people get confused here because Paul is really addressing two people, the traditionalist Judahites who were still practicing the law and the sacrificial rituals. He's not addressing the Jewish Canaanites, the Jewish Edomites, because those people were trying to kill him.
Well, right, but it was also the Greeks who were actually sacrificing on altars, but to pagan gods.
Right, right, okay.
And that's the Canaanitism of the Old Testament.
Right, right. And so he was counseling that against that as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So he was counseling, number one, against the Judaization, which was just beginning, okay?
Well, he's talking about whatever the nations sacrifice, and not the heathen or the Judeans.
Okay.
He's talking about whatever the nations sacrifice. All of the Greek and the Roman tribes and all of the Scythian tribes,
even though
they were long departed from the body of Israel, had sacrificed animals and other things to their pagan gods in much the same manner.
Right.
And that's but to their pagan gods, who Paul says are demons and not God, Yahweh.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, and what I'm simply pointing out is a lot of people assume he's talking about Jews, but he would have nothing to do with the Jews. The Jews are trying to kill him. He's not trying to preach to people who are trying to kill him.
Well, no, but you don't see the Jews running around the Greek world in the first century AD sacrificing the pagan gods.
Yeah. He's speaking to the dispersed Israelites who were paganized, exactly, and he's also speaking to traditional Judahites who, were sacrificing, still according to the Old Testament, okay? And they needed to accept the sacrifice of Christ on the cross, which is still, for them, the law being written in their hearts and not having to be fulfilled to the letter of the law. That was what he's trying to get across to them, okay? All right, verse 41, I will accept you with your sweet savor when I bring you out from the people and gather you out of the countries wherein you have been scattered. Now, of course, the true Israelites were always scattered well before any dispersion of the Jews, okay? But the problem is for most Judeo-Christians, they don't even realize that the true Israelites were already scattered in 745 B.C. and 586 B.C.,
Well, and in the case of these Dorian Greek Corinthians, I just pointed out, 1100 B.C.
Okay, yes. And I will be sanctified in you before the heathen, and you shall know that I am Yahweh, when I shall bring you into the land of Israel, into the country for the which I lifted up my hand to give it to your fathers. Okay, now this is, again, it's a prophecy, so it can't be Palestine, because the 10 northern tribes have already been removed from Palestine.
Well, if this mountain were in Palestine, then as Ezekiel 17:23 says, every fowl of every wing would dwell there.
Okay.
Interestingly, Christ used that same metaphor to describe the kingdom of heaven in the parable of the mustard seed found in Matthew chapter 13.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Throughout all of history, It is only the Anglo-Saxon countries of the world,
yes,
where all of the other races have sought refuge.
That's right.
And that alone proves that we are the people of God,
that's
not
right.
The Jews.
Yeah.
The Jews have never been a kingdom where every fowl of every wing would dwell.
Right. Yeah, well, first of all, no other race wants to live among them. And number two, the Jews keep their religious exclusivity very tightly maintained so that they don't allow it to happen themselves.
Who wouldn't want to move in with a nest of vipers?
That's right. That's right. But, of course, the Caucasian Israelites always produce very prosperous nations into which everyone wants to go. That's true history, folks. Okay? Verse 43. And there shall you remember your ways and all your doings wherein you have been defiled, and you shall loathe yourselves in your own sight for all your evils that you have committed. Of course, now that this kind of been a waxing and waning reality among true Israel, that we nationally repent, as in the case of the Reformation and as in the case of the beginning of America. Because it's very clear that the founding fathers were repentant Christians. Verse 44, and you shall know that I am Yahweh, and when I have wrought with you for my name's sake, not according to your wicked ways, nor according to your corrupt doings, O you house of Israel. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face toward the south, and drop your word toward the south. Now, here, your word is in italics, meaning it was added by the translators, and prophesy against the forest of the south field. What are we talking about here?
Well, it seems to me that the next place he's told to look in the beginning of chapter 21, it is Jerusalem.
Okay.
Okay, and drop toward the holy places,
mm-hmm,
and prophecy against the land of Israel. So
right.
The south, even though Ezekiel is in, he's in Mesopotamia at this time.
Right.
The south can't really mean Jerusalem and Israel. It doesn't seem. They seem to be two different places. So this might be a prophecy against Egypt, Arabia, Edom, all those places south of Israel.
Okay.
And those people have never had any peace or prosperity until we, like fools, began buying their gold.
Right, right. Yeah, it wasn't until the white colonialists brought Africa up out of its darkness, right, that they even had roads or houses. All they had was grass huts. They didn't even have the wheel. They didn't have a language. Verse 47, and say to the forest of the south, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus says Yahweh, behold, I will kindle a fire in you, and it shall devour every green tree in you and every dry tree. The flaming flame shall not be quenched, and all faces from the south to the north shall be burned therein.
And they are today.
Yeah, yeah. And well, obviously, we're living in the era of the lukewarm Laodicean church. There's no flame in those people. But there is within Christian identity. Verse 48, and all flesh shall see that I, Yahweh, have kindled it. It shall not be quenched. Praise Yahweh. Then said I, ah, Lord God, they say of me, does he not speak in parables? He sure does. Okay, chapter 21. And, of course, in chapter 13 of Matthew, where the apostles asked Jesus, why do you speak in parables? His answer is, because I only want the Israelites to understand what I'm saying. I don't want those non-Israelites to know what I'm talking about. Okay? Chapter 21, verse 1. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face toward Jerusalem and drop your word, again, your word is in italics, and drop toward the holy places, and prophesy against the land of Israel. And say to the land of Israel, thus says Yahweh, behold, I am against you, and will draw forth my sword out of its sheath, and will cut you off from the righteous and the wicked. So does he not punish his children?
But let me say, there's an odd, I'm sorry. Yes, mm-hmm. He does punish his children, absolutely.
Yes.
There's an odd idiom here. It's not really an odd idiom. But, you know, the Greek word, the verb lego, okay, it also it means to say, but it also means to lay out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Well, this Hebrew word, which is translated drop here.
Yeah.
It means to drop, drip, distill, or to discourse.
Okay.
Prophecy, preach, discourse. In other words, to lay something out.
Okay, it's talking about discernment. Discernment.
It's talking about a prophecy, yeah.
Right.
To lay this out, to lay these words out toward the holy places.
Yeah.
Or to lay these words out towards the south.
Uh-huh.
It's very, from what I'm seeing here, it's used very much like the word for the Greek verb to speak, which is lego. It's one of many Greek verbs.
Okay. So it means show understanding. You have to.
I think it means to lay something out for the hearers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
explain it. Explain it in detail. Yeah. Okay. Verse 4. Seeing then that I will cut off from you the righteous and the wicked, therefore shall my sword go forth out of its sheath against all flesh from the south to the north, that all flesh may know that I, Yahweh, have drawn forth my sword out of its sheath. It shall not return any more. So, I mean, if there's any question, if a Christian has any question why he's suffering, it's because Yahweh is punishing him for his sin.
Well, here, you know, this where he says, I will cut off the righteous from the wicked and the wicked. To me, this describes the separation of the good figs and the bad figs.
Right.
Ezekiel 20, verse 38, which we read in the last chapter, and I will purge out from you among the rebels.
Mm-hmm.
He will cut off from thee the righteous and the wicked. He will sever the righteous from the wicked.
Yes, yes.
And evidently, it shall not. He takes his sword out of his sheath, and it shall not return to its sheath anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There is no end of war. I will make war against Amalek, which are the Edomites in part, from generation to generation.
Right.
There's
right.
no end of war until the children of Israel learn who the wicked are, and that we must separate ourselves from them permanently.
Right.
And this is why, for all these centuries, we can never find any true and lasting peace.
That's right. That's because we always make covenants with Jews. That's right. Verse 6, sigh, therefore, you son of man, with the breaking of your loins and with the bitterness sigh before their eyes. And it shall be when they say to you, why sigh you, that you shall answer for the tidings, because it comes, and every heart shall melt, and all hands shall be feeble, and every spirit shall faint, and all knees shall be weak as water. Behold, it comes and shall be brought to pass, says Yahweh. Now, it's interesting to me here because we're definitely, America and Western civilization is being brought to its knees at this very time.
And they're enjoying it.
Right. They don't understand that, you know, that this all these catastrophes that are happening are coming about because of our disobedience. We can't blame anybody else but ourselves, okay? Even though the Jews are always part and parcel of the deception that's going on in Christendom, but if we were obeying his laws, these things wouldn't be happening. It just wouldn't be happening. We'd have pastors who would be opening the eyes of the flock rather than causing them to sleep and be deceived. Verse 8, again, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, son of man, prophesy, and say, thus says Yahweh, say a sword is sharpened, and also furbished, or polished, or made even sharper. It is sharpened to make a sore slaughter. It is furbished that may it glitter. Should we then make mirth? It contempts the rod of my son as every tree, and he has given it to be furbished that it may be handled. This sword is sharpened, and it is furbished to give it into the hand of the slayer. Of course, this is talking about judgment. Verse 12.
Well, let me read my revelation of, you know, my translation of Revelation 13:10 here.
Okay.
And the King James and most modern interpretations, I think, have this screwed up. If one is for captivity, into captivity he goes.
Mm-hmm.
If one is to be slain by the sword, he is to be slain by the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Thus is the patience and the faith of the saints. And if we're rebels, or if we transgress the law, we're going into captivity, or we're being slain by the sword. And we may end up there for the purposes of Yahweh, and even if we're not. That's the way it is.
Right.
That's the patience and the faith of the saints.
Yes.
As soon as Yahweh deported our race from Israel, put us off, divorced us, that there is no avoiding these trials, which we were foretold would befall us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it's our lack of awareness. The vast majority of white Christians simply fail to perceive that these judgments are following us throughout history because of our disobedience. And, you know, they're inventing new ways to disobey Yahweh as we speak. Verse 12, "Cry and howl, son of man, for it shall be upon my people, it shall be upon all the princes of Israel. Terrors by reason of the sword shall be upon my people. Smite therefore upon your thigh." Well, you know, I really have to say here that it's the denominations themselves, the Judeo-Christian denominations, who are for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Why are our people dying there? Why are their limbs being blown off? Because they practice a religion which teaches it. If we wouldn't practice a religion that teaches warfare on behalf of the Jews, it wouldn't be happening. Verse 13, "Because it is a trial, and what if the sword contemn even the rod? It shall be no more, says Yahweh. You therefore, son of man, prophesy and smite your hands together, and let the sword be doubled in the third time, the sword of the slain. It is the sword of the great men that are slain, which enter into their privy chambers."
Well, when we start Peter tomorrow, I don't know if we'll get to it tomorrow or next week, but we'll see that this life is a trial,
uh-huh.
that the trial by fire is in this world.
Right.
And this is what Yahweh is saying now, that we're to undergo trial, that his sword will not depart from us. We may escape his wrath,
yes.
yet with the blood of the Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And by clinging to his law and seeking his righteousness.
That's right.
But even that's not exactly guaranteed. We think that because
right.
we're Christians, we're entitled to some kind of nice, cushy, comfortable life here.
Right.
And that's not true at all.
That's right.
And that's a very strong message here, right here in Ezekiel.
Well, even Paul says we are to welcome tribulation because the tribulation tempers us and makes us ready for what's to come, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can't be wishy-washy Christians and expect to earn the kingdom. We just can't. Okay, where did I leave off? I totally lost my place here. Oh, privy chamber.
Verse 15.
Okay, verse 15. "I have set the point of the sword against all their gates, that their heart may faint and their ruins be multiplied. Ah, it is made bright. It is wrapped up for the slaughter." And obviously, I mean, if you can't see the signs of the times, that we're getting ready for a global tribulation here, World War III, with all kinds of, you know, we can expect even worse storms than Katrina, this Gulf oil slick. It's all getting worse and worse and worse. There's nothing good happening right now, folks. The culmination is happening right now. So prepare yourself. "Go you one way or another, either on the right hand or on the left, wherever your face is set. I will also smite my hands together, and I will cause my fury to rest. I, Yahweh, have said it. The word of Yahweh came to me again, saying, also, you son of man, appoint you two ways, that the sword of the king of Babylon may come. Both the two shall come forth out of one land, and choose you a place, choose it at the head of the way to the city." Is he talking about, you know, the fact that the Judahites divided themselves between those who accepted the punishment to go to Babylon and those who decided to go to Egypt? Is this what we're talking about here? Verse 19?
Well, I think he's talking about the king of Babylon coming and his way being split in two as we read the subsequent verses.
Okay.
That one sword will come to Rabbath of the Ammonites
uh-huh.
and
okay.
the other to Judah in Jerusalem.
Okay, so he's talking about...
Yeah, right. It really can't be told until you read past...
Right, okay, the Babylonian army coming in. Okay, a point away that the sword may come to Rabbath and the Ammonites and to Judah in Jerusalem, the defensed. For the king of Babylon stood at the parting of the way, at the head of the two ways, to use divination. He made his arrows bright. He consulted with images. He looked in the liver.
Now, he looked in the liver. The Greeks and the Romans did the same thing.
Okay.
Herodotus writes about it of the Greeks. He writes about it of the Persians. It's told, it's alluded to as far back as Homer, that the pagan priests thought that they could slay an animal and open it up and sacrifice it on the altar, but take its liver and examine it.
Right.
And if there were no flaws on the liver, you know, if it was flawless, then that had that bore good tidings
right.
for their endeavor.
Yeah.
But if the liver had a spot or the lobe was out of place or whatever
right.
you know, flaw it had in it that was considered contrary to the normal appearance,
yeah, right.
then that would forebode bad tidings for their endeavors.
Right, right. Yeah.
And
do you know
sometimes
about...
they would just slay animals until they found one with a good liver, right?
Right.
Say, okay, now we can raid the city.
How did they read entrails?
well, yeah, that's the same way. That is basically the reading of entrails.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, it's slicing the guts open and pick something, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
Oh, let's see what the liver looks like.
Right, yeah, well, you know, the large intestine doesn't look too good. Oh, boy, we're in big trouble. Verse 22. At his right hand was a divination for Jerusalem to appoint captains to open the mouth of the slaughter, to lift up the voice with shouting, to appoint battering rams against the gates, to cast them out, and to build a fort. And it shall be to them as a false divination in their sight, to them that have sworn oaths, but he will call to the remembrance the iniquity that they may be taken. Okay, so whatever the Judahites try to do, it will not work, because this is punishment for their iniquity. Verse 24, therefore, thus says Yahweh, because you have made your iniquity to be remembered, in that your transgressions are discovered, so that in all your doings your sins do appear, because I say that you are come to remembrance, you shall be taken with the hand. Of course, whatever we do, it will be found out. Verse 25. And you profane wicked prince of Israel, whose day has come, when iniquity shall have an end. And to me, you know, because I constantly think in terms of the Judeo-Christian churches, and their false belief that they've already been saved and they can do no wrong. That's really what they're teaching, that they can do no wrong. They're just waiting for the rapture, when they'll be all raptured up to heaven, and you know that there's really nothing to worry about. Okay, well, these verses say there's plenty to worry about, because if you're not obeying his laws, your iniquity will be exposed. Verse 26, thus says Yahweh Elohim, remove the diadem and take off the crown. This shall not be the same. Exalt him that is low and abase him that is high. Again, here we have the Judeo-Christians exalt themselves. It's their gospel of personal salvation by declaring themselves saved, or by declaring themselves to be born again, whatever that means. Okay. That they are suddenly out of harm's way. Well, it's arrogance. It's delusion. Verse 27, I will overturn it, and it shall be no more until he come whose right it is, and I will give it to him. Now, of course, this is the famous British Israel verse that they're talking about, the overturning of the throne of David. What do you see here?
Well, this is what the, right, this is the commonly interpreted three overturns of the throne of Israel. And the British Israel people, yeah, you know, they say that this is the throne going from, they cite Ezekiel 17, yeah, you know, the taking of the tender twig from the highest branch of the cedar in Lebanon.
Right.
Which has to be, it in context, as I said in the synopsis at the beginning of this program, that has to be a reference to some part of the royal family.
Right.
It has to be.
Right.
And bringing it to the house of Zarah and as a transfer of the promise of David. That all makes perfect sense prophetically and, mm-hmm. and historically.
Right.
Now the British Israel people take this and say that these three overturns were from Palestine to Ireland,
right?
But which is after the Irish poems that have the Yokaid the Heremon, the Irish king, and marrying this princess that was brought to him by Alam Fadwa,
right?
The wise prophet,
yeah. Tiatefi, right?
Well, right. The whole Tiatefi story, which I dispute that the veracity, not based on the story, but based on the provenance of the manuscripts. I don't accept it as gospel, right?
Okay.
Because the provenance just really isn't there.
In other words, you're saying.
Well, yes, it's plausible, and something like this had to happen in order to keep the promises to David and to explain the end of Ezekiel chapter 17, how that was fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Something like it had to happen based on the word of Scripture,
right.
Even if it's not the Tiatefi story.
Right.
It had to be something similar.
Right.
I want to believe the Tiatefi story. I just, you know, and so do most people in Christian identity. I just give the advice I do because I'm careful about the providence,
right.
That I can't teach it as gospel,
right.
or historical fact.
Okay, so the first overturn was from Palestine to Ireland. Okay.
And the second would be from Ireland to Scotland.
Okay.
And we see the pillar of what's esteemed to be the pillar of Jacob or the stone of Scone.
Right.
And we know it's the stone of Scone, and we know that the kings of Ireland by all historical accounts were crowned on it,
right.
and thus also in Scotland. And we know that this stone went with the Stuart kings to England.
Mm-hmm.
That's the third overturn.
Right.
Now, that's the commonly accepted interpretation of this in British Israel studies and in Christian identity, you know, in general. I'm not going to dispute it. I'm just going to say again, I would be careful about it. It can be elucidated as one very plausible interpretation,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't say that it's gospel.
Yes. Okay, well, but verse 26 refers to the take off the crown, and obviously it was Zedekiah who was blinded and carried off to Babylon, and Zedekiah's daughters wound up sojourning in Egypt for a while. We don't know
with Jeremiah, right?
Yeah, with Jeremiah.
They must have left Egypt.
And with yes, they did. Absolutely did. And then continued on to Ireland. That's the historical fact. Now whether this verse is actually prophesying all that.
Well, this is definitely related to the end of Ezekiel 17 because it's talking about the exaltment and the abasement.
Mm-hmm.
Of people in the royal line, and it's related to the crown. It's
right.
related to
right.
the throne of David.
Yeah, so the daughters became, the Zedekiah's daughters became the exalted ones, in other words. Okay.
Well, if they indeed went to the house of Zarah, then Zarah became the exalted ones.
Okay.
Because the house of Zarah would have inherited, and rightfully because they were from Judah,
yes.
but they would also have assumed the promises to David.
Right. Yes.
Where that would have been removed in part, not in total, because
right.
I mean the people going were of the house of Perez, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
it would have removed the house of Perez from the picture if this was indeed the princesses of Zedekiah, and that's what the scripture intones, who went with Jeremiah.
Right. Okay. Verse 28, and you, son of man, prophesy and say, thus says Yahweh Elohim, concerning the Ammonites and concerning their reproach, even say you, the sword is drawn, for the slaughter is furbished to consume because of the glittering, while they see vanity to you, while they divine a lie to you to bring you upon the necks of them that are slain of the wicked, whose day is come when their iniquity shall have an end. Verse 30, shall I cause it to return to its sheath? I will judge you in the place where you were created, in the land of your nativity. And, of course, you know, this is the judgment of Jerusalem. And I will pour out my indignation upon you. I will blow against you in the fire of my wrath and deliver you into the hand of brutish men and skillful to destroy. And that seems to be happening to us quite a lot, right? Are being delivered into the hands of brutish men. You shall be for fuel to the fire, Your blood shall be in the midst of the land. He shall be no more remembered, for I, Yahweh, have spoken it. So, in other words, in our arrogance, in our self-described arrogance, we guarantee our own downfall, because Yahweh has guaranteed that that will happen.
And that's today's Judeo-Christians.
Yes.
Aside from that, I have some notes on these Ammonites, right?
Okay.
Because why would the Ammonites be mentioned here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, suddenly, this whole thing's been against Israel, and suddenly
right.
the Ammonites are mentioned, and Ramah in particular.
Right.
And I'd like to say that although we see the Ammonites are greatly reduced, and their land is divided amongst the Israelites, in Judges chapter 3, and we find that at 1 Samuel chapter 11, they are again reduced by Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And it's evident that it's totally evident from the Old Testament, from Judges and the later books,
yes.
that the people of the children of Israel dwelt in the land of Ammon for
right.
many centuries.
Right.
And there were still people
Moab,
around
yep. mm-hmm.
who identified themselves as Ammonites as late as the time of Ezra 9:1 and Nehemiah 4:7.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Ammonites and the Ammonites did craftily by Uzziah when he became king, and they brought him gifts, and that's in 2 Chronicles chapter 26. And Jotham later again subjected them in 2 Chronicles 27:5 and put them under tribute. Now Jeremiah also makes a prophecy against the Ammonites around this time, and that's found in Jeremiah 49:1-2. Quote, concerning the Ammonites, thus says Yahweh, has Israel no sons? Has he no heir? Why then does their king inherit Gad and his people dwell in his cities?
Hmm.
Now what we see here is we see a struggle. The children of Israel, Gad and Reuben and half the tribe of Manasseh, they were supposed to take the land of the Ammonites.
Right.
And to a great extent they did, but they didn't clear all the Ammonites out.
Right.
So there was always struggle between the two groups. Now,
right.
in one place, Solomon actually marries an Ammonitess.
Uh-huh.
And she becomes the mother of the heir
mm-hmm.
of the king. But I believe that she was probably, like Ruth, an Israelite dwelling in Ammon.
Okay.
And that is why the sword is also coming here against Ammon, because a lot of those people are Israelites mixed,
mm-hmm.
Israelites who are identifying themselves as Ammonites.
Right.
Israelites who are mixed with Ammonites.
Right.
And Ammonites.
Yeah.
I think you'll find all three, the history will bear out that all three
yeah.
types are living in what's called, the city called Ramah.
Well, that's what we've got today. We have
it absolutely is.
Yes. We have half-breeds. And we have, we have black Africans, we have Chinamen, we have Jews, all who are non-Israelites living among us, reaping havoc.
Well, right, but I would think that once Israel, well, I'm sorry, it's not Ramah, it's Rabbah. Once all of Israel was taken away, and most of the people of Reuben and Manasseh and Gad were also deported, but there were some Israelites left behind, it's very clear. And that escaped the sword, that escaped the Assyrians,
mm-hmm.
and that these people actually started to describe themselves as Ammonites.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and the Ammonites were always a source of trouble for Israel, and since they didn't clear them out like they were supposed to originally, because Yahweh tells us numerous times in the book of Deuteronomy that the Israelites were supposed to exterminate all of their enemies.
Well, right, and my
didn't.
Point is that they ended up living with them.
That's right.
And even identifying with them. And we see those same patterns today.
That's right. Okay.
And how many white kids you see in the inner city today even identifying themselves right along with the Negroes?
Right, yeah, and wearing pants below their butts.
With the clothes they wear, with the music they listen
yeah.
with the way they talk, with
Don't
the way they
call
act.
It music. All right, chapter 22, verse 1. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me saying, now, you son of man, will you judge? Will you judge the bloody city? Yea, you shall show her all her abominations. Then say you, thus says Yahweh Elohim, the city sheds blood in the midst of it, that her time may come, and makes idols against herself to defile herself. You are become guilty in your blood that you have shed, and have defiled yourself in your idols which you have made, and you have caused your days to draw near and are come even to your years. Therefore have I made you a reproach to the heathen and a mocking to all countries. Again, our people, the white race, has become a laughingstock. Because why? Because we're giving everything we used to own away to people who don't deserve it.
Well, absolutely. Now that today there was a, and I know somebody that's associated with the military. Actually, I know a few people, but one of them told me that he received an email.
Okay.
And actually, probably, I'll ask my brother when I talk to him, but everybody associated with the government, I think, received this email.
Okay.
Asking for people to text a certain message to a certain number so that their cell phone will automatically be billed $10 and the money will go to Pakistan.
Now, what's the basis of this $10 fee?
The floods. It's a $10 donation.
Oh,
for these poor people that were destroyed in this flood.
Okay, is this mandatory donation?
No, it's an appeal.
Okay.
From the government to government employees to give $10.
Okay.
I'm sure some Jew is probably scraping pennies off in a few various places along the way.
That's right.
But they're supposed to give $10 for aid to Pakistan.
Right.
And I'd like to know if this happened when Iowa was flooded,
yeah,
2 years ago. Well, when Tennessee was flooded this
past
year,
or even when New Orleans was flooded, right?
Right. I seriously doubt it.
Yes. Yeah.
But when it's Haiti, when it's Pakistan, they fall head over their heels. When it's Malaysia, we rush to these people.
Yeah.
Well, what about the people in Tennessee? What about the houses that were washed down the Mississippi River?
Exactly. What about Americans? We aren't worth helping, right?
Okay. No, white people don't get help.
That's right.
White people, there's no appeals on television to help white people. There's no, white people don't jump up and down and scream for government help when bad things happen to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't blame the government when bad things happen, right? Everybody else does. Okay, verse 5. Those that be near and those that be far from thee shall mock you, which are infamous and much vexed. Of course, we have become infamous and much vexed. Behold, and of course, the Aztlan, the south of the border, they're accusing us, we're the colonialists and we've taken their land away from them and we're the white people are evil and should go back to Europe, right?
Well, the answer we should give them is the same answer that Israel gave to the Moabites.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and we were just talking about the Ammonites, right? So let's talk about the Ammonites. The Ammonites, actually.
Okay,
Ammonites. The Israelites had taken the land, not from the Moabites, but I think from the Amorites, or maybe the Amorites it was.
Okay.
That they took this land of Moab from the Amorites.
Okay.
Okay? The Moabites weren't dwelling in it. Okay? They took it from the Amorites.
Okay.
And even though it was land that the Amorites had taken from the Moabites. And then the Israelites dwelt in this land for 300 years during the Judges period.
Yeah.
And it's stated explicitly.
Right.
And then the Moabites come and say, we want our land back. And the Israelites are like, what, are you nuts? We've been living here for 300 years.
Right.
And we didn't even take it from you.
Right.
We took it from the people that took it from you.
Exactly.
And now you want it back? When we came, the Spaniards occupied Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Right? And here come the Anglo-Saxons. And eventually we get this land. And now these Indian tribes want it back. And they haven't lived in it for 300 years.
Right, right. And they're not Indians.
It's the same story.
Bill, they're not even Indians.
They're Jews. They're right. Jews mixed with Indians.
Exactly. They're not Aztlan. They're Muranos.
Well, right.
That's
and
they really
adopted,
are.
They've all adopted Spanish names and Spanish
exactly.
labels.
Exactly. How can they possibly call themselves Indians? Native Indians can't.
Well, you know something? The Moabites of the Judges period, they weren't Moabites.
Right.
They were Canaanites. It was the same story. It's the same history all over again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Except now we want to give it to them. Now we're ceding it to them. Even though it's not written down, we're still ceding it to them.
Right.
And our ancient ancestors, they told the Moabites to go to hell.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's what we should do with the Mexicans.
Well, verse 5 again, those that be near and those that be far from thee shall mock you. And, folks, we are being mocked by the mestizos, which are infamous and much vexed. Behold, the princes of Israel, everyone were in you to their power to shed blood. And folks, we're doing all this stuff. We shouldn't be engaging in all these foreign wars. We should be defending our own territory if we're attacked. We're not being attacked by Afghanistan and Iraq. We never were. Verse 7, in you have they set light by father and mother. In the midst of you have they dealt by oppression with the stranger. Boy, are we being oppressed by strangers. In you have they vexed the fatherless and the widow. You have despised them because they've destroyed the institution of marriage. Verse 8, you have despised my holy things, yet have profaned my Sabbath. In you are men that carry tales to shed blood. All the politicians are doing this, folks, and so are the preachers. And in you they eat upon the mountains. In the midst of you they commit lewdness.
It sounds like the neocons at Bohemian Grove.
That's right, and the liberals. 10, in you have they discovered their father's nakedness. In you have they humbled her that was set apart for pollution, and one has committed abomination with his neighbor's wife, and another has lewdly defiled his daughter-in-law, and another in you has humbled his sister, his father's daughter. Folks, this is what's going on today. I mean, what's happening, Bill? Our people are following the example that's being presented to them on Jew television.
Well, absolutely, and there's a high amount of sexual promiscuity today.
That's right.
It's incredible.
It is incredible.
I don't know if it's quite this bad yet amongst whites, but this is all common amongst non-whites.
Right.
Now, this is common, and I know for a fact that all of this is common amongst the Puerto Ricans and the Mexicans,
right,
and the Cubans.
Yeah.
And we have these people in our land in great numbers.
Right.
And if we don't learn it, if we're not doing it yet, we'll sure as hell learn it from them.
Right, right. And they may have family values to the extent that they have cookouts with a lot of the in-laws coming over, right? But a lot of those in-laws are what do you call it, inbred.
Well, I know I can say with certainty that nearly all Spanish girls are deflowered by the time they're 13.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost always the uncle.
Right. Really?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Verse 12, in you have they taken gifts to shed blood. You have taken usury and increase, and you have greedily gained of your neighbors by extortion and have forgotten me. Boy, is this describing here and now? Verse 13, behold, therefore, I have smitten my hand at your dishonest gain, which you have made, and at your blood, which has been in the midst of you. Now, the fascinating thing for me, Bill, is to observe these Judeo-Christians, these very smug, self-righteous Judeo-Christians, who do not, first of all, they do not see all the evil that's happening around them, and number two, they don't take any responsibility for, at the very least, it's sinning by omission, by not warning people against these crimes. And then most of them actually encourage these crimes, because most of them actually say, you know, well, sign your sons and daughters up for war. Send them off to Afghanistan and Iraq so they can die for the Jews.
Well, it's the Christian duty to rebuke all sin.
That's right.
Every time he sees it.
That's right. And the churches are not doing it. They're part and parcel of it.
They're teaching Christians not to do it.
Yeah.
They teach Christians that there's no need to do it, that you either hate the crime but love the sinner.
Right. Right, and the sinner just keeps on doing what he's doing.
Well, of course. Well, where the New Testament admonition of Paul was to put those people out of the assembly.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that they don't come to church on Saturday or Sunday or whatever day you want to go to church.
Right.
What that means is that they have no part in your community.
Right.
They are out.
That's
they
right.
are on the streets. Beat it.
Yes.
Scram.
Right.
Go away.
A corrupting influence is going to remain a corrupting influence.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why it has to be put out of the community. There's no other way.
And that's Christian, and that's Paul. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 5.
Yeah, there's no other way to solve the pollution problem. You can't wish it away by declaring, oh, well, we love you.
No, Paul cites the Old Testament law, put away the sinners from among you.
That's right.
Now, in the Old Testament, they stoned them.
Right.
And in the New Testament, we're not to stone them. We're to put them out of the community, and Yahweh will judge them.
That's right.
If we don't put them out of the community, Yahweh's not going to judge them. He's going to judge us.
Exactly. That's what Ezekiel, in these first 22 chapters of Ezekiel, that's the theme. That he is judging us.
So our country's overrun by immoral people, and who's suffering?
Yeah, we are.
Are the fags celebrating on Fifth Avenue suffering? Right. They're not suffering. They're having a jolly time.
Well, the Mexicans in America are much better off than the Mexicans in Mexico. They're living at our expense. That's why they're all coming here.
Because we suffer the sin and put up with it and don't cut those people off.
That's right.
We're the ones to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll continue to pay for it until we learn to separate ourselves from the heathen. Verse 14, can your heart endure or can your hands be strong in the days that I shall deal with you? I, Yahweh, have spoken it and will do it. Now, it just remains, you know, it's like this planet, Bill, is an insane asylum. And the insane asylum has a religion called Judeo-Christianity, which doesn't know that it's an insane asylum. They think it's normal.
Well, right. They don't even know they're being punished. It's crazy. They're paying half of the money they make. They're paying in taxes. They're paying it back to the government.
Right.
And they're buying goods at super inflated prices. Most of the other half of their income is being paid in interest to credit card companies or mortgage companies.
Right.
What do you have left? What can you keep of your own salary? Nothing.
Yeah.
It all goes to the Jew.
Yeah, and we exhaust ourselves working for other people. We don't enjoy the fruits of our own labor anymore because everything is so corrupt. And I'm just blown away. I'm amazed.
They brag this is a free country, paying 50% tax rate, 55% inheritance tax, 10 hidden taxes, 11 hidden taxes on a gallon of milk.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whatever happened to the idea that Christianity is supposed to make the world a better place? Not succeeding, folks.
Because we've embraced the enemies of God. We've embraced the Jew. We've brought them we've brought the wolves into the sheepfold.
Yeah, yeah, and the Judeo-Christian pulpit masters don't see that it's falling apart, that it's not working. They don't see it. They keep preaching the same failed philosophy of race mixing. The law has been abolished. There is no such thing as sin. You know, all this ridiculous stuff that they just made up out of thin air, and they haven't learned yet. But Yahweh says, I'm going to put you, I'm going to press your back up against the wall, and I'm going to punish you until you learn. But these people these Judeo-Christians are so blind that they refuse to open their eyes until they get slapped in the face by the very people that they're trying to help, which is non-whites. And that they're going to see that day. That day's coming. Every single white Christian who has given up his dominion, guaranteed to the Adamites, will get slapped in the face. There's no doubt about it. Okay? All right, so we're at the 90-minute mark here. We just completed chapter 22, verse 14. Let's pick it up at verse 15 next week, okay? And then, not tomorrow, but the following Saturday, I have an engagement in Rockford, so I can't be around. But we'll start tomorrow. We'll start 1 Peter, correct?
Wonderful.
Okay, excellent. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. This is the racially exclusive Christian Christian identity message. We're not embarrassed by it, folks. We're not ashamed of Jesus Christ, who is our Savior of true Israel. I come not but for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Praise Yahweh. Thanks for listening. Yah bless, everybody.
Praise Yahweh.